side. The ground dropped away a little before resuming its climb on the opposite side of a toy-like valley. It rose and rose and met the ground which climbed behind me. Beyond the overgrowth and rock on either side of me, I could just make out the distant ends of the world, blurred and blued by the haze of intervening air. At first glance, I seemed to be in a very long cylinder-shaped habitat, but that wasn't the case. The sides met each other at either end, suggesting that the overall shape of the structure was that of a spindle, two cones placed back to back, with my chalet somewhere near the point of maximum width. I racked my memory for knowledge of habitat design, and came up with nothing except the nagging sense that there was something out of the ordinary about this place. There was a hot blue-white filament running the length of the habitat, some kind of enclosed plasma tube, which must have been able to be dimmed and shaded to simulate sunset and darkness. The greenery was enlivened and counterpointed by small waterfalls and precipitous rock faces, artfully arranged like details in a Japanese watercolor. On the far side of the world I saw tiered ornamental gardens, a quilt of different cultivations like a matrix of pixels. Here and there, dotted like white pebbles, I saw other chalets and the occasional large hamlet or dwelling. Stone roads meandered around the valley's contours, linking chalets and communities. Those near the end points of the two cones were closer to the habitat's spin axis, and the illusion of gravity must have been weaker there. I wondered if the need for that had been a driving force in the habitat's design. Just as I was beginning to seriously wonder where I was, something crept out of the undergrowth, picking its way into the clearing via an elaborate set of articulated metal legs. My hand shaped itself around a non-existent gun, as if, on some muscular level, it had expected to find one. The machine came to a halt, ticking to itself. The spider leg supported a green, ovoid body, featureless except for a single glowing blue snowflake motif. I stepped backwards.
"Tana Mirabel?"
The voice came from the machine, but there was something about it which told me the voice didn't belong to the robot. It sounded human and female, and not entirely sure of itself. "I don't know."
"Oh dear, my Castellano isn't all it could be."
She had said the latter in Norte, but now she shifted to the language I'd spoken, sounding even more hesitant than before.
"I hope you can understand me. I don't get much practice in Castellano. I'm hoping you recognize your name, Tana. Tana Mirabel, I should say. Mr. Mirabel, that is. Am I making any sense?"
"Yes," I said, "but we can speak Norte if it makes it any easier on you. If you can put up with me being the rusty one."
"You speak both very well, Tana. You don't mind if I call you Tana, do you?"
"I'm afraid you could call me just about anything you liked."
"Ah, then there is some amnesia. Am I correct in assuming that?"
"I'd say there's more than a little, to be honest." I heard a sigh.
"Well, that's what we're here for.
That is indeed what we're here for. Not that we wish it upon our clients, of course.
But if, God forgive, they happen to have it, they've really come to the very best place. Not, of course, that they had much choice, though. Oh dear, I'm rambling, aren't I? I always do this. You must feel confused enough, without me wittering on. You see, we weren't expecting that you'd wake quite so soon. That's why there isn't anyone to meet you, you see."
There was another sigh, but this one was more businesslike, as if she was steeling herself to get to work.
"Now then, you're in no danger, Tana, but it would be best if you stayed by the house for now, until someone arrives."
"Why? What's wrong with me?"